Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And all living creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings. Take care, to care. We are here to love ourselves, to love one another, to love our surroundings, to love, to love, to love.
Na hasan aniva nijone ko shabotya, nijone ko shabotya.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing native peoples throughout the world with native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Oh, can I talk person to all of our relations?
Yo, you are.
Leipzig from Haudenosaunee Mohawk singer-songwriter Howard Lyons from his CD entitled Spirit Walk from Sound of America Records. That particular song was entitled Yo Yawahe, Mother Earth, Our Holy Place. I want to read Howard's song's liner notes, and I quote, "Our Mother Earth is one of our most highly valued resources. Without her, all human races would cease to exist. All cultures must give special consideration to her care to some degree. It is our duty and responsibility as stewards of this land to ensure that she remains to be regarded as a holy place. To continue to treat her with such disregard should be as criminal as it threatens the health, well-being, and prosperity of future generations for all human races. Every living spiritual element our Mother Earth sustains is vital in the cycle of life," unquote. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Today's program is entitled Bear Spirit, Mr. Tom Goldtooth, Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Yaak Kitishi Native Center is very pleased to present the comments of my brother warrior, Tom Goldtooth. He is one of the greatest contemporary Earth justice heroes. I am personally very, very honored to call Tom my friend, teacher, and mentor. In the 1990s, Yaak Kitishi Native Center was honored to attend an American Indian tribunal convened to record testimony about crimes against indigenous peoples by the United States. The tribunal was held at DQ University in the traditional homeland of the Wintu, Puwin, and Patwin peoples, now called Davis, California. DQ University is named after two great native figures in indigenous peoples' history, Daganoweda and Quetzalcoatl. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, Daganoweda brought the Great Law of Peace to the Haudenosaunee Iroquois Confederacy. Quetzalcoatl was an Aztec prophet who symbolized the principles of wisdom and self-discipline. DQ has the spirit of the eagle and the condor. DQ University is one of the first native institutions of higher learning in modern times. DQ University is dedicated to the progress of indigenous peoples through education. Established in 1971, DQ is designated a tribally controlled community college governed by an Indian Board of Trustees. I have had the honor to speak at DQ University on several occasions. Today's program is a Wolf Mountain Radio recording of Mr. Tom Goldtooth's testimony at the American Indian Tribunal at DQ University. While most of our worldwide listeners know about the Indigenous Environmental Network, IEN, I will provide some background information about this wonderful organization, which Yaak Kitishi Native Center is proud to be a part of. Indigenous Environmental Network is an alliance of grassroots people whose mission is to strengthen, maintain, protect, and respect the traditional teachings, lifestyles, and spiritual interdependence to the sacredness of Mother Earth and the natural laws. Indigenous Environmental Network is an activist alliance of indigenous peoples addressing environmental and economic justice issues through grassroots organizing that impact tribal, national, international policies with a challenge of achieving systematic change. Indigenous Environmental Network's missions, principles, and codes of ethics, as posted on IEN's website, is mission statement. The indigenous peoples of the Americas have lived for over 500 years in confrontation with an immigrant society that holds an opposing worldview. As a result, we are now facing an environmental crisis which threatens the survival of all natural life. In 1991, near the sacred Bear Butte in South Dakota, near 500 Native people came together at the outdoor second annual IEN Protecting Mother Earth gathering. At this gathering, this unifying principle and the Environmental Code of Ethics were written. Unifying principles. The indigenous peoples of the Americas have lived for over 500 years in confrontation with an immigrant society that holds an opposing worldview. As a result, we are now facing an environmental crisis which threatens the survival of all natural life. We believe in unified action, sharing of information, and working together with mutual respect. We recognize we must assert our sovereignty and jurisdictional rights through the application of our traditional laws and recognizing our traditional forms of leadership of our indigenous nations. We stand on principles of empowering and supporting each other to take direct, informed action and affect our ability to protect our lands from contamination and exploitation. By attempting to fulfill our responsibility to defend our Mother Earth, we are assuring the survival of our unborn generations. The members of Indigenous Environmental Network are unified in our recognition that the traditional teachings, lifestyles, spirituality, cultures, and leadership of our people, as well as the survival of our future generations, are entirely dependent upon our respectful relationship with the natural world and our responsibility to the sacred principles given to us by the Creator, Environmental Code of Ethics. As Indigenous peoples, we speak for ourselves. No one else is authorized to speak on our behalf. Environmental groups have no right to represent Indigenous peoples. We represent ourselves. We will always stand by the strongest position in defense of traditional natural law. We will support Indigenous peoples' rights to self-determination. We will not make accommodations for or deals with polluters. We support basic principles of environmental justice, including the rights of people to a clean environment, regardless of race, economic position, gender, or national identity. Violations of environmental justice we understand to be violations of international law, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the United Nations Convention on Genocide. The mission, principles, and code of ethics of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Indigenous Environmental Network, like Yat Kitishi Native Center, supports the rights of sovereignty and self-determination for all Indigenous peoples throughout the world. IEN's campaigns and focus areas exemplify the many important issues in which the network is dedicated to. These include youth program and youth leadership training, toxic and environmental health, Indigenous mining and oil, Native energy, climate justice, globalization, trade, and environment, water for life, biodiversity, bioethics and biopiracy, food security, Indigenous sustainable communities, traditional knowledge, and labor and economic justice. I urge our listeners to visit Indigenous Environmental Network's website to learn more about these concerns and others, such as their listing of environment and economic justice issues in Indigenous lands now called the United States and Canada. They are described in the webpage section term Snapshot. IEN's website is www.ien.earth.org. Again, Indigenous Environmental Network's website is www.ien.earth.org. At this time, I also wish to share a little background information about IEN's Executive Director, Tom Goldtooth. Tom has been a warrior for Mother Earth and Indigenous peoples for many, many years. He is active in intertribal, international, and national affairs that affect Native lands and Indigenous peoples. Tom is Dene Navajo and Dakota. I first met him when I was a delegate and member of the Indigenous Peoples Caucus at the historic 1991 First National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit. Since that time, I have had the very special honor to know him from participating with him in a number of events where he has been a leader. Some of these include National Symposium on Health Research and Needs to Ensure Environmental Justice, Southern Community Labor Conference for Environmental Justice, Indigenous Environmental Network Protecting Mother Earth Conferences, Midwest Great Lakes Environmental Justice Summit, and the National Coalition for Health and Environmental Justice Conference, to name a few. As a Native journalist, I have heard Tom and other important forums Wolf Mountain Radio has reported on. to give our listeners an example of his knowledge. These include annual U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, National Environmental Justice Advisory Council, NEJAC sessions, the historic 1992 Carioca Conference of Indigenous Peoples on Territory, Environment, and Development that coincided with the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development, the Rio Earth Summit, and the Native Peoples and World Climate Change NASA Conference. Wolf Mountain Radio listeners have heard our program on Indigenous Peoples and the United Nations World Summit on Sustainable Development, highlighting the Kimberley Declaration and sharing Mr. Goldtooth's presentation to the UNWSSD Johannesburg South Africa Conference as another example. I have also had the privilege to learn from Tom while reporting on the three United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues sessions. There are many other things we could highlight about Tom Goldtooth, such as his association with the International Indian Treaty Council, if we had more time. Suffice to say, Tom Goldtooth walks the red road with the spirit of bears watching over him. Please listen now to the testimony of Mr. Tom Goldtooth on Indigenous environmental issues. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yad Kiddushi Native Center. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwisin, to all of our relations.
Hello. I'd call my next witness, Mr. Tom Goldtooth. Can you tell the tribunal, please, who you are and what nations you're affiliated with?
My name is Tom Goldtooth, and they call me where I come from, Atoa Wayakapi, as the bears look over me. I'm a member of the Dene and also Mithawakaton Dakota nations, Southwest, and also from Minnesota.
And you're here to speak about certain human rights violations. It's my understanding your testimony is going to concentrate on environmental issues and how they affect the human rights of the of your people. Is that correct?
Yes, that's what I was invited to talk about.
And can you tell the tribunal what local and national environmental groups you're associated with?
I'm a member. I'm one of the co-chairs of the National Task Force of a grassroots indigenous organization called the Indigenous Environmental Network. And also, I'm an environmental coordinator of the Red Lake Nation, which is a band of the Anishinaabe Nation in northern Minnesota.
It's my understanding that you are engaged in gathering evidence about the policy of water diversion of the United States government and corporations under its control and influence, water diversion from native lands. Can you tell me what evidence you have been able to gather that there is a policy to divert water from these lands to the detriment of the native peoples?
Well, presently we're right in the midst of collecting the data, the documentation, but we've been working with indigenous people from Canada and also the western states. We have issues starting with the Alberta, the Blackfoot people. We have Milton Born with the Tooth that is on a campaign up there to expose the corporate plan and Canadian government in their efforts to also working in collusion with the United States and diverting Old Man River. And he's been very effective at, on a campaign nationwide to expose that, and has even gone to jail for taking a bulldozer to break the dam. So we also have documented also we're collecting evidence. We have indigenous people along the Columbia River that the Klickitat and the Cascade nations, the small bands, and they're known to the United States government as members of the Yakima Nation, but they are Klickitat Cascade people. And they also are very concerned in trying to collect information of water diversion plans with the Columbia River.
Can you tell me whether the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers are involved in any of these schemes?
There's evidence that is there, especially in the plains. In my travels with the Indigenous Environmental Network, many of the plains nations, northern and mid plains, Midwest, a lot of the reservoirs around the reservations have been drained by the Army Corps of Engineers.
How do these water projects affect the ability of indigenous peoples to subsist from working the land?
Well, one of the most important things that in indigenous thinking as traditional people, that we have a relationship to the earth that is beyond a political relationship. It's beyond a social and a cultural relationship. And this is what identifies us as indigenous people, and that's a spiritual connection that we have with the earth. In a recent testimony at the recent First Annual People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit in Washington, D.C., that was a historical event as far as quote-unquote legitimizing the term environmental racism. We were there amongst other people of color, and we expressed our connection, our spiritual connection to the earth as a mother. And there was a lot of hesitance in an environmental gathering like that to talk about religion. But as Native people, as indigenous people, that's our connection, our number one connection. So if we don't have this connection, if this connection is altered, this connection is disturbed, if there's impacts to the ecosystem, the environment in our native lands, this could impact the medicines that we need to doctor our people with that are sick. It impacts the way that our economies and our lifestyle was self-sustaining. We're not able to grow the crops that we used to grow. So all this impacts the fish, the wild game. A lot of our people still hunt in some parts of our indigenous territories. There are many different subsistence ways that we have, but basically that's how it affects our people. When you remove the water is the lifeline of our people, and we need that to sustain ourselves as indigenous peoples.
Am I correct in believing that some of the diversion programs entail constructing dams on your land? Is that correct?
Yes, and there's been many recent meetings and debates over water rights. Water rights is beginning to be a very serious concern. We're very concerned about the United States government and a lot of the actions they've been taken lately. We feel that water rights is going to be a critical issue with our many tribal nations that's going to impact our indigenous people. We have national Indian organizations, and I won't call them indigenous. They're Indian American Indian type of organizations that do not represent our traditional indigenous way of thinking. And very, very often they're jeopardizing our relationship with the earth and looking at pro-growth development and sustainable development, which is a contradiction in itself.
Do any of these dams flood the sacred burial lands of your people or other native peoples?
There is documentation on that taking place. And I can think of three places, is in Fort Berthold, North Dakota. The Mandan Hidatsa people there, there was a dam that was built there with the approval of the United States government. And even though there was resistance from the people there, they went ahead and flooded a lot of that area there, in which also contained sacred areas, sacred spiritual holy ground. And also down further along the Missouri River, the Standing Rock, the Hunkpapa Lakota people, which are the descendants of Sitting Bull, a lot of their land was also flooded. Also encompassing burial grounds and fasting places where people go to for their spiritual efforts. And also along the Columbia, when we had a gathering up there in Columbia at Celilo Falls this year with the Indigenous Environmental Network, we had about 500 people that came to that gathering. And we documented evidence there through film and also written documentation of the, what the government did there, the state government did there. They flooded the Columbia River. They made a dam. And we talked to the elders there, and the elders said they weren't told that the river was going to be dammed. That they weren't told that. And they were very curious back in the 50s when there was a bridge being built, and they wondered why it was so high. That bridge was being built there. And then that's their traditional fishing grounds there. And like I said, as indigenous people, we have a relationship to the natural world. We have a relationship to the earth. So there, that impacted their survival as indigenous people. It flooded their fishing grounds. And one thing we learned from the Klickitat people there in the Cascade is that they call themselves the river people. They have a spiritual relationship to the fish there. And if they can't fish, they say that we will die. And the fish are talking back to them saying, if you don't fish us, we will die. So they will continue to fish there as best as they can. But their main fishing grounds there, the Celilo Falls, is now flooded.
Now, of these three examples that you've just cited to the tribunal, do you know whether or not the Army Corps of Engineers, the United States Army Corps of Engineers, was involved in any of those projects?
I believe they were. At Celilo Falls, there's a park right across from one of the village sites along the Columbia River. There's a little park there that is managed to this day by the Army Corps engineers.
With respect to those three sites, again, do you know if any federal money was used in their construction?
I believe there was.
Do you also know, with respect to those three sites, whether the fact that they would flood sacred lands or sacred waters was brought to the attention of the various governmental agencies involved in the construction?
We were told that they did mention that numerous times.
Circle of life, mouthful of theologer. She cried. She cried with broken spirit. Two human hearts that do not appear.
Music from Anishinaabe singer-songwriter Richard Sear from his 1992 cassette entitled 500 Years, that particular song entitled Tears of Mother Earth. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Native Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. We are presenting the testimony of Mr. Tom Goldtooth, Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Mr. Goldtooth just responded to a question at the tribunal regarding the sacredness of water, water rights, and some of the impacts and concerns Indigenous peoples have on huge dam projects. I want to share with you a statement on this subject. It is entitled, We Are Planted Here, Rooted in Sacred Mountain Land. All our dead are buried here. They must. For this where they spring from, King Lion Mountain. When one of our people drowns in the river and his body is carried downstream, why do we go all the way to the sea to bring back the bones of our people? Because the dead belong to their roots. They must come back to us, our mountains. Otherwise, their spirit will not find peace, and they will come back to haunt us. Now we are asked to allow our dead to be covered by the waters of the Chico River Dam. This is an impossible request. Separated from our dead, we will die. Our spirit and those of our ancestors are within this mountain place. We may as well remain here and drown in the same waters that will wipe them out forever and drown our land. The government assures us it will spare no effort nor expense to disinter the dead, to remove their remains to new in better sites. The government does not understand. The very land we live on, our mountains, is the dust of our fathers. The president assures us that the government will recompense us double whatever we lose in the destruction of our fields, our forests, our villages. Perhaps it will and can. But our Yukali, our culture and spirituality, this cannot be replaced, and its loss will be our death as a people. We are steeped in this tradition, from the soles of our feet to the crowns of our head. Essential to our Yukali, our Papatayan, our sacred forests. These cannot be transferred with us to the new relocation sites that the government speaks of. Will we leave our Yukali? No. We will not leave our mountain, our forest, our land. We will fight against the dam project. Those words are translations of a native Kalinga speaking to his tribe against the Chico River Dam. The Chico River Dam was a proposed World Bank, IMF, U.S. Agency for International Development, UN Development Program to destroy a sacred mountain region of the Mountain Kalinga Apayao and the lands now called the Republic of the Philippines. I had the honor to live 3.5 years with the Kalinga Apayao, helping to fight the proposed Chico River Dam project. And I had the honor to live there from 1975 to 1979.
I'd like you to turn your attention now to the issue of toxic waste. It's my understanding that there is legislation pending, which would facilitate the ability of private companies to contract with tribal governments for dumping toxic waste. Can you speak to that?
We have information, and I'd like to submit for the record. I don't know if the previous speaker did submit that. I believe she did, but there is, you know, I'd like to submit this for the record. It's called the Toxic Threat to Indian Lands. It's a Greenpeace report that was submitted, and it was done in collaboration with a lot of our indigenous peoples from the Dene Care and from other grassroots organizations, which later became a lot of the people and supporters behind this initiative and this report later formed the Indigenous Environmental Network. But in this report, you'll find that, yes, there's evidence that a lot of private race industry companies approached Indian land with very lucrative, tempting proposals. We call it economic blackmail, promising our tribal governments lots of money, millions of dollars of money and potential jobs for permission to come on to our indigenous territories to build hazardous waste facilities, toxic waste facilities, municipal garbage waste facilities, nuclear waste facilities. And within this document, it documents, I believe, 44 such communities that have been approached. I believe the latest figures are up to about 60 communities that have been approached by private waste companies. We believe that there is information there that the government is very knowing of this pattern and has not made sufficient initiatives to protect our indigenous territories from these unscrupulous businesses that are trying to come on our Indian lands. Some of the reasons that these companies want to come on Indian land, indigenous land, is that a lot of our indigenous territories do not have environmental infrastructures in place. They do not have the environmental administration, the environmental tribal codes, regulatory standards, and also do not currently have the enforcement powers that's necessary to control, to prosecute non-native, non-indigenous people and companies that may want to come and contaminate, pollute our territories. If you pursue this, you will find that there are serious jurisdictional issues. According to the United States government, this colonial government here in this country, they don't grant our indigenous territories full sovereignty. It's quasi-sovereignty. It's only half sovereignty. So because of that, they're very reluctant to authorize us the full powers that we need as tribal governments to develop very effective environmental protection laws based upon our own indigenous philosophies to protect our lands. We're very limited in that. As you may or may not have heard earlier, we're in a very serious junction here as indigenous territories and governments, because we do not have a tax base. We do not have the monies to develop these programs that we need to protect our lands. And these private waste industry know that. There is a serious case situation right now that the United States government is not protecting our Indian territories. They are not looking for the betterment of our health and our environment. They are mandated through treaties, through the various regulations and statutes and different agreements we've negotiated through Congress, that they are mandated to provide that protection. The Bureau of Indian Affairs is an entity, federal aid entity, that has severely neglected its responsibility. The Indian Health Service is another federal agency that is inadequate in protecting for the protection of our lands and our people. And because there is no technical assistance there from these federal agencies, and because over time many of our tribal governments have developed a dependent relationship on these federal agencies, there's no dollars and grants to provide the necessary programs that we need to protect our communities. We're very vulnerable then. We're very vulnerable to the private waste industry. And they know that. And the United States government knows that. We come out with figures on how much it would cost to implement effective environmental programs with our tribal communities, our governments. And we come up with a figure we need a minimum of $35 million to develop environmental initiatives in all our tribal communities. And right now we barely get $10 million. It's just a drop, and that's environmental, I call it institutional environmental racism by the EPA. And as I said, right now, probably a clarification on this solid waste, garbage, toxic waste issue, these dumps. Clarification, I have to say this right now, is that the United States government hasn't even looked at what it would cost to clean up, in my own personal figures, over 1,000 to 1,500 open landfills, open dumps, toxic dumps. They're leaching right now. This is our own waste that we generate in our reservations. We need that. We need monetary dollars to do proper closure on those, to install monitoring wells and implement proper control mechanisms. So with this happening, it's knowingly, they know that it seems as if our Indian lands are expendable. Our people are expendable. That's the way our people feel. We can't do anything about it. That's a lot of our people think that way. That these toxic dumps that currently they were set up by the Indian Health Service. They told us that this is a safe place to put your garbage, that nothing's going to go wrong. But we're very concerned about that. So we've been lobbying. We've been trying to lobby through the United States government and the various mechanisms that they tell us to do, but they keep saying we can't do anything for you, that we can't close up the dumps, and we don't know what you want to do. So I suspect personally that the United States government doesn't want to bear responsibility on our own personal municipal solid waste issues within our Indian territories. And they're trying to marriage us with the private waste industry. There is currently a Senate bill and House bill, Senate Bill 1687, that is in Congress right now. I call it the commercial garbage bill. It provides a mechanism for our tribes to negotiate contracts with the private waste industry. And so again, I feel that the government knows this, and they're trying to get us to develop contracts with the private waste industry.
Tom, I'm going to ask you one question to close. And again, if you want to make comments in addition to the answer, please feel free to do so. When we spoke during the break, you made some comments to me about the nuclear industry and about nuclear power and how it affects indigenous peoples. And you described the relationship between the nuclear industry and indigenous peoples as one that extends from the cradle to the grave. And as a story of deception, you told me a bit about the Prairie Island. Could you explain to the tribunal what you mean by describing the relationship as from the cradle to the grave and tell them what the problem was with Prairie Island?
I wish I had more time. I could go on for all day talking about these issues. And before I go, I do want to submit for the record, and I'm going to have to get another copy for you, but this is called the Indigenous Environmental Perspectives, a North American Primer. It's a discussion and series of case studies of North American indigenous environmental issues and a framework for discussion of sustainable development. And this was prepared by one of our sister organizations called the Indigenous Women's Network. But one of the things that we mention in here is that we have experienced as indigenous people in the United States the impact of nuclear production, nuclear weapons production, nuclear energy production from cradle to grave, literally. We have the mining of uranium that's done. There's a lot of information there. That we have information documented here, the effects of that on our indigenous people. We have the Navajo, Diné people in the southwest, and also the Pueblo people who have died, literally have died. The miners weren't protected by the United States government. There weren't adequate ventilation systems. There wasn't proper monitoring back in the 50s. and a lot of these miners have died, passed away. I'm just looking at lung cancers, and 18 of the miners in 1975 who had worked in the mines had died. And by 1980, 38 had died, and 95 more had contracted respiratory ailments and cancers. And a lot of the offspring, the children, are coming up with defects. And there's a lot of documentation in there. So from cradle to grave, we get into the processing of uranium and the effects on the Cherokee people in Oklahoma. We have NACE is another sister organization, Native Americans Concerned for the Environment, that have been working on these issues. And they have evidence of babies being born without eyes, eye sockets, limbs missing, respiratory and cancer in the Cherokee Nation area of Oklahoma. And this the culprit of this is the Sequoia Fuels Corporation, which they bought that facility from Kerr McGee. So that's the processing of uranium. And then we have the nuclear production. And in some of my relatives in Minnesota, we have a precedent right now at Prairie Island. It's a small Mitawakatan Dakota community, and these are the Eastern Fire Dakota, the Eastern Dakota people that live in Minnesota from the Sacred Lakes. And it's about 200 people in that Prairie Island community. They never knew that there was going to be a siting there, a nuclear power plant. They were told that it was going to be steam production. From the steam that's going to create energy. They never told them it was going to be nuclear. So right now that facility is reaching its limits in their nuclear waste. So it's spent fuel rods. They're looking for, trying to get permission to storm on that facility, which is only 700 meters from the Dakota village there. And the people are trying to stop it. But despite the people there and what our people want, the NSP, which is the Public Utilities, we believe they have full support of the United States government, the nuclear industry, Department of Energy, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They're all working together to keep that going. It's a matter of economics. Every day they keep that facility going, they make $1 million. That's what we come up with figures. They make $1 million in revenue every day to keep that going. So it's the expense of our people, the health of our people, for money. Thank you. I just want to make one more remarks. We are trying to protect our sovereignty right now. It's being tested again, once again. We have a federal, this is United States government initiative. They hired a nuclear salesman called David Leroy. He's the nuclear negotiator. And he's been approaching many of our reservations and states. But it seems to be unfair, disproportionate number of the people who governments who have responded have been our tribal governments. Again, it's economic blackmail. The nuclear salesman is promising our communities billions of dollars and promising new schools and hospitals and wants to them to site a monitored retrievable storage facility, MRS, for all the nuclear waste that this country is generating, and it's going to be at the expense of our people. And our people are very vulnerable right now. Our tribal leadership do not have the information to make adequate and environmentally sound decisions. We have an issue of colonial nerve gas on our tribal leadership. And so we need someone to look into these issues. And the sovereignty is being tested. Our people at tribal governments are losing sovereignty. And it's going to threaten our sovereignty. One of our tribal nations, the Mescalero Apaches in New Mexico, is at phase two. And they're telling their people, nuclear industry technicians and specialists are telling the people there that it's a safe technology, that it's state-of-the-art technology, and we're very concerned. We try to bring other people in to talk to the people, but they try to keep our people out of there. But they need information, because if they're allowed to build that facility there, one accident will wipe out a whole nation of people. It's that serious. But we are asking for this country has to stop producing nuclear power. It has to cease now. Thank you.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Centers, Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our broadcast time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. I hope you really appreciated the testimony of Mr. Tom Goldtooth, Executive Director of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Mr. Goldtooth's testimony was at an American Indian tribunal convened to record testimony about crimes against Indigenous peoples by the United States. The tribunal was held at Daganoweda Kwasikudal University. I encourage all of our worldwide listeners to learn more about and support the work of the Indigenous Environmental Network. You can learn more by looking at their website, www.ienearth.org. Again, the Indigenous Environmental Network's website, www.ienearth.org. You can also write to the Indigenous Environmental Network at IEN, P.O. Box 485, Bemidji, Minnesota, 56619, USA. Again, the surface mailing address for Indigenous Environmental Network is IEN, P.O. Box 485, that's Bemidji, capital B-E-M-I-D-J-I, Minnesota, 56619, USA. You can email IEN at IGC.org. In the few remaining moments left, I want to read several statements. This is first the open statement by the Indigenous delegates to the first National People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit that I was proud to be a member and delegate of. Quote, environmental justice affirms the natural laws of Mother Earth, Indigenous treaties, agreements, compacts, and covenants, including support of legal, political, and grassroots efforts of Indigenous peoples to protect their Indigenous hunting, fishing, and gathering rights, livelihoods, sacred lands and waters, sovereignty, and self-determination, unquote. The next statement I want to read is a statement from the Southern Community Labor Conference for Environmental Justice. It is entitled Native American Statement, written by Tom Goldtooth and myself, Ones Pritzker. Quote, the tribal sovereignty of Native American people must be respected. The violation by the United States government of Native American treaty rights contributes towards the exploitation of this country's natural resources. This results in the pollution of air, land, and water. Environmental justice demands that the United States government legally and morally recognize and honor its treaties, agreements, compacts, and covenants with the country's indigenous peoples, the Native American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islanders. Environmental justice considers the historical government neglect abrogation and indifference of these treaties, a violation of international law, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and the United Nations Convention on Genocide. We support the efforts of Native American people to protect their indigenous hunting, fishing, gathering rights, livelihoods, access to sacred sites, protection of religious freedom, protection of burial sites, and repatriation of burial artifacts and cultural remains, unquote. And that was a statement that Tom Goldstooth and myself wrote in December 6, 1992, at the Southern Community Labor Conference for Environmental Justice. And finally, I want to conclude with sharing with our worldwide listeners the preamble of the historic document entitled Principles of Environmental Justice, or more commonly called the 17 Principles of Environmental Justice. And here is the preamble, quote, "We, the people of color, gathered together at this multinational People of Color Environmental Leadership Summit to begin to build a national and international movement of all peoples of color to fight the destruction and taking of our lands and communities, to hereby reestablish our spiritual interdependence to the sacredness of our Mother Earth, to respect and celebrate each of our cultures, languages, and beliefs about the natural world and our roles in healing ourselves, to ensure environmental justice, to promote economic alternatives which would contribute to the development of environmentally safe livelihoods, and to secure our political, economic, and cultural liberation that has been denied for over 500 years of colonization and oppression, resulting in the poisoning of our communities and land and the genocide of our peoples, to affirm and adopt these principles of environmental justice," unquote. Well, dear friends, we're going to conclude with a song from a contemporary Native American band, XIT, and this is from their Without Reservation CD from Sound of America Records. The title of the song that we conclude today's program with is entitled Color Nature Gone. Until the next Wolf Mountain Native Radio program, I thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Song from our album Silent Warrior Song has to do with ecology, a song called Color Nature Gone. Fish of all.